Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Ian Tuttle of National Review is in for Jim Garrity today. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives, as usual. And Ian, a couple of curious timing for a couple of Hillary Clinton-related stories. They just happen to coincide when the entire media is focused on the arrival and the visit of Pope Francis. I'm sure there's no coincidence there whatsoever. One is that she is now officially opposed to the Keystone Pipeline. The other information, which I think is even more significant here for, and this is our official good martini, is the fact that the FBI has apparently determined that Hillary Clinton might have needed a different cloth to wipe her server. Here is Ed Henry of Fox News explaining this to Megyn Kelly last night.
This Bloomberg report, quoting one anonymous source familiar with the FBI investigation, is suggesting, as you say, that the FBI has recovered not just personal email, but work-related email. Why is that significant? Go back to the beginning when Hillary Clinton first revealed this at that news conference on March 10th at the United Nations. Her narrative was that she had deleted roughly 30,000 personal emails that were just about yoga, her daughter's wedding, and that the rest were work-related emails that she turned over.
So, Ian, obviously this is significant in a couple of different ways. First of all, it would appear that some of the things she deemed were personal emails were, in fact, work-related emails. We're still going to find out over time how many of those potentially had classified information, and we'll see what other emails, personal or professional, might yield, especially if there's anything related to the Clinton Foundation in there. So a lot of different things that could have Mrs. Clinton very nervous right now, and that's a pretty good thing.
First thing, obviously, keep eyes peeled over the next 5-6 days or so for, you know, whatever else falls out of the papal news dump, which seems already, you know, we seem to get a couple stories this morning that would be significant stories for the media. If not for Pope Francis' visit, this is unsurprising. And it just goes to show that as the cliche goes, once it's on the internet, it's permanent. Or at least you need a much better IT scrubber than the Clintons seem to have employed. Just to add to the Clinton troubles, there was a great story from Politico last week, I think it was, when a Politico reporter was on the line with a Clinton campaign representative who was trying to reassure donors that, you know, everything was okay, just everybody needed to take a deep breath. But what was interesting and what the reporter pointed out afterward was even the Clinton campaign representative said, well, you know, this email thing is unfortunately out of our hands. There's nothing we can do about it. And we just sort of need to hunker down because there's going to be more coming out. So, we've said before here, and I know a lot of people have said it, the story isn't going away. And the more data that we can recover, and the FBI has FBI sources anonymously have said that they're very confident that they can recover most of the deleted emails. At least that's what Fox is reporting. All of that points to a scandal that's going to continue for some time. So, sit back, pop some popcorn, and get ready to be further amused.
Yes, this is the story that keeps on giving, because the longer she drags it out, the longer the story stays in the news. And I know she's hoping for FBI exoneration here, but that doesn't seem to necessarily be where the story's headed at the moment. But we'll see over time. But just getting the truth, I think, is the thing we want here most of all. And if it happens to benefit the conservatives, all the better. So on to the bad martini now. And this is courtesy of your colleague, David French, over on the corner at National Review Online. First came reports that the multi-million-dollar effort to train quote-unquote moderate Syrian rebels had yielded only 4 or 5 fighters still in the field. The rest apparently had been routed. Yesterday, however, we learned that the rout was not the only disaster to befall the program. We were also, surprise, surprise, reportedly betrayed by our allies. And he's quoting a report here. Pentagon-trained rebels in Syria are reported to have betrayed their American backers and handed their weapons over to al-Qaeda in Syria immediately after re-entering the country. Fighters with Division 30, the moderate rebel division favored by the United States, surrendered to the al-Qaeda-affiliated Jabhat al-Nusra, a raft of sources claimed on Monday night. A statement on Twitter by a man calling himself Abu Fad al-Tunisi, a member of al-Qaeda's local affiliate, Jabhat al-Nusra, reads, quote, "A strong slap for America. The new group from Division 30 that entered yesterday hands over all its weapons to Jabhat al-Nusra. After being granted safe passage, they handed over a very large amount of ammunition and medium weaponry and a number of pickups." So, Ian, every step of this story along the way has been a complete disaster. And now we're once again reliving when the Iraqis gave up all the stuff we gave them and handed it over to ISIS.
Exactly. We tried this before. It didn't work. And so naturally, in the ethos of government work, we thought, well, let's try it again and hope for different results. The Arm the Moderate Syrian Rebels course of action was a farce from the beginning. People on the right had pointed out that this was likely to be a foreign policy disaster. Not only has it cost a fortune, but had no beneficial results. And as this story reveals, has in fact just been intentionally turned against us by the very people we trained. I'm ripping from David here, but he asks in his write-up, is this the Obama administration's greatest foreign policy debacle? You can compare it to Libya. You can compare it to Yemen and Somalia, which the White House had claimed were its two great, you know, foreign policy successes, both of which are falling apart as we speak. I would say that this absolutely has to be up there. And while the Syrian refugee slash migrant crisis unfolds, and there are, I think, sort of legitimate protests, I've made them to the extent to which the United States has any sort of moral obligation for what's going on over there. It is certainly the case that the United States, the Obama administration's negligence, its foolhardy policies where it did act, its failure to act on the red line, all of these things have made the situation rather far worse than it might have been otherwise. And we're going to be dealing with the consequences and picking up the pieces for years and years to come. And of course, that'll be the work of a new administration. President Obama will not have to deal with that. He can deliver his $100,000 speeches to universities and relish the glow of being an ex-president.
One small correction to David's story, because we have to be fair to the president here. It's not four or five fighters. They updated that late last week. There were actually nine fighters that successfully graduated from this program. So major difference there. All right, on to the crazy martini now. And this does relate to the Pope's visit this morning. The Pope had his arrival ceremony at the White House. He actually got into town yesterday. And a couple of curious moments in the president's welcoming remarks. Towards the very end, he said, "Your Holiness, in your words and deeds, you set a profound moral example. And in these gentle but firm reminders of our obligations to God and one another, you are shaking us out of our complacency." Later in that paragraph, he says, "You shake our conscience from slumber." And you would think that he would perhaps give a broad view of the things that the Pope would like our conscience to consider. But the president decided to focus on the two issues that he loves that the Pope's on the same side as him with.
"Holy Father, we are grateful for your invaluable support of our new beginning with the Cuban people. And Holy Father, you remind us that we have a sacred obligation to protect our planet, God's magnificent gift to us. We support your call to all world leaders to support the communities most vulnerable to changing climates and to come together to preserve our precious world for future generations."
And then on top of that, Ian, he also mentioned refugees and immigrants in passing. But then he offered this, which we would agree with, but we're not quite sure he's practicing as much as he speaks about.
"So we stand with you in defense of religious freedom and interfaith dialogue, knowing that people everywhere must be able to live out their faith free from fear and free from intimidation."
So, Ian, a lot of different interesting connections in what the president had to say. What's your take?
Thank you for awaking from slumber the conscience of all the people who disagree with me, is effectively what the president is saying there. He's sort of doing his Ron Burgundy here. You know, Ron Burgundy would famously in Anchorman read whatever is on the teleprompter. You've got to think that Obama is reading some of these lines. Ideally, he would feel cheap reading some of the things that are saying some of the things that are coming out of his mouth. But more likely, he's just sort of reading what's already been written there for him. But it's astonishing. I mean, here to praise this Pope for pricking the conscience of the nation, and then in, you know, the next sentence to talk about how you're a steadfast defender of religious liberty. This is the same administration that has literally argued in courts that your First Amendment rights go out the window when you open a business. This is just unbelievable two-facedness from this president to basically say, you know, this Pope is a wonderful example of a mature moral conscience when he agrees with me, and then to pay lip service to the fact that you're slapping down the Pope's very people, the little sisters of the poor, in federal court. I mean, it's just outrageous. And frankly, anything that this this president and this administration says about religious liberty, my only response is, you know, please spare me.
And he's also the president who last week promised to veto legislation that would require medical personnel to try and save the lives of babies who are out of the mother's womb and survived attempted abortions. So
exactly.
Apparently the conscience wasn't pricked on that issue either. Ian, you are in New York. This is our exit. We never really like to do passings as a bad martini, but America lost a treasure overnight in Yogi Berra, the legendary Hall of Fame catcher for the New York Yankees. I believe he won 10 World Series as part of that team, three-time MVP, World War II veteran, actually was in the U.S. Navy and serving on D-Day off the coast of Normandy. Always well known, of course, for his malapropisms that everyone is fondly remembering today. Regardless of party, regardless of political persuasion, I think pretty much everybody loved Yogi.
Yeah, absolutely. An American icon and arguably one of the great American philosophers of the 20th century.
Yes, certainly the case. So, Ian, we'll actually be back with you on Friday. Until then, thanks as always for being with us.
Thanks, Greg.
Ian Tuttle of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us. And be sure to tune in again on Thursday for the next Three Martini Lunch.